Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 40, and it's bye week, and the Steelers go in 6-2, Dave, coming off a 20-15 Sunday night win over the Detroit Lions in Detroit. A win is a win is a win, and as we've kind of talked about and felt over these victories over the Bengals and the Chiefs and some of the earlier victories in the year, there's a lot to like about it. At the end of the day, they get to win, and there's a lot to point to and say they got to do this better. But here they are at the halfway point, pretty close to what we both expected, 6-2. How you feeling? How'd you feel about last night?
David, I'm very disappointed. This team should be 8-0, and I'm worried about this trap game against the bye.
They're all trap games. They're all trap games.
This bye team has me scared. I don't know. Where the hell do we start here? They beat a Lions team with a great quarterback. Anytime you hold a team out of the end zone, a quarterback like Matthew Stafford out of the end zone as many times as they did down that red zone, and you hold that team to 5 field goals, And you win the game, you know, there's something to be said about that. We're going to be going over a lot of explosive plays that the defense allowed. This is by far the worst game against the pass that this defense has played. The offense, yada, yada, same old, same old. We'll discuss all of that as well, too. But, look, yeah, I thought it was a gutty win. I thought they showed a lot of character in this game in several different facets. And they are 6-2. It's not the 6-2 I think most of us drew up at the start of the season. But like it or not, this is the number one team in the AFC, and they're entering their bye week, and they should be healthier coming out on the other side of it.
Okay, so here we are. And as we talked about, the bye week here, and we'll spend today going over the game, and we'll do some things a little bit differently kind of this week and next week because there won't obviously be a game this coming weekend. But today's focus, obviously, the 20-15 win. Dave, I asked on Twitter after the game, how do you feel about the win? And obviously, at the end of the day, you know, whichever column you're putting the check mark in, W or L, should be the overriding factor of what happened. Were the Steelers the better team on the field last night?
Were they the better team on the field last night? No, they weren't.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think they were. And if the roles had been reversed and the Steelers had come out of this game 20-15 losers in the fashion that the Lions did, they'd be burning down the city. I mean, you know, the Lions were over.
Whoa. Let me back that up. Offense, most definitely not. Their offense was definitely not the better of two offenses. The defense, though, like I said, there's something to be said about those stops. So if you want to call it a wash.
No question Steelers D made some big – there's no question they made some big plays. They also gave up a ton of big plays to put themselves in a position to make big plays.
Right. And really, look, I mean, the Lions defense didn't do themselves any favors in the Steelers offense not executing left several plays that should have been made on the field. So it's not like it's not like the Lions defense was light out. The Steelers just didn't take advantage. And look, you could go through 20 plays in every game and say, well, the defense, the offense didn't capitalize here, and the defense, you know, got lucky here, or, you know, got a break here. But okay, carry on.
Yeah. Okay. So look, I think we're in the same. But doesn't the at the end of the day, they won the game, and that's what counts. And look, we've seen the Steelers. Everybody's seen games where if you're not looking through it the perspective of having a rooting interest, you know the team that won the game wasn't the better team on the field, whether it be turnovers or, you know, missed opportunities in the red zone or whatever it is. And if you know the other team still has to make plays to win the game, so it's not necessarily a disparaging comment. But if you looked at a stat sheet and you said one of the teams turned the ball over more and the other team gained 100 more yards, you would just intuitively, if you had to put money down on the stat sheet of who won the game, you would assume the other team won the game. The team with the more yards and fewer turnovers won the game. That's just generally how it works. But the Lions couldn't cash in, and credit goes to the Steelers for their red zone defense. So let's start with let's just get the injuries and the inactives out of the way. The injury situation kind of played out as we expected, Dave. And boy, talk about a little bit of concern early. We see now how important Vance McDonald has been to this team in the run game, and Jesse James getting popped early. All of a sudden, it might have just been Xavier Grimble, but James was able to come back in that game.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised. In fact, it was a 7 inactives that I guessed prior to the game. And look, I mean, 5 of them or 6 of them were gimmies. So I had about a 7-foot putt and I made it. So the only issue there was and the reason I thought Moats would dress was just because of the bodies and T.J. Watt coming off of showing up on the injury report on Friday. They made it through the game relatively healthy, and boy, whatever any of y'all are doing out there to help this team get through this season, with as healthy as they've been, keep doing it, because this is kind of really we're kind of in that unheard of kind of type area through 8 games here. Yes, they've had people miss games with injuries, however, there's really been
one guy on the IR.
Yeah.
Not one since the season started.
Yeah, and none where you're saying, boy, I wonder if this guy is going to miss the next 5 weeks instead of go on IR. Now, yes, Marcus Gilbert's missed a lot of time with his hamstring injury. Yes, he probably rushed back too early and re-injured it. Stuff onto it, the thing with the back, we'll see. But and Mike Mitchell was injured against the Lions, an ankle injury, and Chris Hubbard pulled for to be checked for a concussion. You would suspect he's in concussion protocol as we speak now, but overall this indeed is a healthy team right now.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, so why don't we, this game was so all over the place, it's not an easy game to decide where to start, but let's start offensively. And again, Mike Tomlin deciding to take the ball when the Lions called the wrong side of the coin on the coin flip. The Steelers get the ball. And Dave, they go right down the field, and Eli Rogers gets a chance early on we'll get to Eli. So the first play of the game, the Steelers run that fake bubble screen. And this, in terms of play design and what Todd Haley does, I've said, Alex and you and I have talked about this and charted and shown this play. This is one of my all-time favorite Steeler designs, where they used to run this play where Heath Miller would come from the tight end position and come out and pretend to block. Ben would throw a pump fake to whoever the wide receiver was for the screen out there with another wide receiver also blocking, and Heath would release, and nobody would go with him, and they'd hit him in the hole there behind the coming up defensive back and go for 15, 20 yards. The Steelers ran that again with Jesse James and Juju here, and they both released. Jesse James released kind of a little bit more of an inside route, and Juju released up the sideline. They get the 40-yard gain or whatever it turned out to be. nitpicking things here, there are a lot of people who immediately on Twitter, Dave, said, if Ben lays that ball out there, that's a touchdown for Juju. It's the first play of the game. You want to hit that pass. Did you have any problem with how Ben threw the ball?
Not at all. And look, people wonder – why they run so many of those RPOs and some of those wide receiver screens like they do. All that shows up on tape, and when you come out and that's your first play, you got to know the defense is super aggressive to start things off. As soon as they see Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown dip back behind the line of scrimmage there, and Ben kind of take the quick snap and turn that way, you know they're going to be aggressive. So you props to them for scripting that as the first play right out of the shoot. And that's exactly what it was a scripted play, I'm assuming, off of a coverage that they expected most definitely to get there. So, you run that play to open up a game like that, and then – you also are able to run a play like that in a game once if you've used, a lot of those screens early in the game as well. So absolutely no issue with that. Great throw by Ben, and, boy, what a way to start off with a double explosive play.
Yeah, I love that. I love that call. I love that play. And they go, they move the ball down the field to the point where, they're down in the red zone. And they get the opportunity with Eli Rogers, and it's a flat drop. It's not a perfect throw by Ben, but it is certainly a plenty good enough throw by Ben. Rogers tries to do, catch it the way you're taught to caught a football, right hand over the top, left hand running toward the right sideline, right hand over the top, left hand under, and just goes through his hands. And if you watched the NFL yesterday, obviously the Steelers didn't have any weather issues, but there were, you watch games, there are plenty of drops. We saw a flat drop from Juju later in the game. We saw some Lion tight ends have some drops. It happens in the game. Dave, how critical should we be of guys dropping the football? Because obviously, as analysts, the people watching the game, they expect every pass that hits guys in the hands to be caught. And obviously that's not reasonable, but how do you build that into the way you watch a game?
That ball should have been caught. That's how I build it into it. A third and two play. It's there. If we're going to criticize Ben and microscope every one of his throws, we have to do it with the wide receivers as well, David. It's only fair. Eli Rogers, pardon me, is just a guy, David.
Yeah, he has certainly, I had high expectations coming off last season. Look, the guy had a good season. 50 catches is that's real stuff in the NFL when you do that. And it looked like coming out of the first 2 weeks that Eli was going to be a big part of this offense. Seven or eight catches coming out of the first two games since the fumbled punt in Chicago. And again, we'll get into some of that issue later in the show here. Since the fumbled punt in Chicago, loses his spot, loses snaps, the emergence of Juju. We'll see. It'll be very interesting to see how Mike Tomlin handles the wide receiver snaps going forward, because Darius Heyward-Bey and Justin Hunter are just guys as well. So where are those snaps going to go, and what role are Eli Rogers and Martavis Bryant going to have? Because clearly now I think we can say with some level of confidence after this game, Dave, obviously Antonio Brown's one with a bunch of stars after his name, but Juju's your number two receiver right now.
And plus, I say that about Eli Rogers. I like Eli Rogers. I think he's got above average route running ability. I'm not I'm not ready to go there. His yak is still less than desirable. His yak, I think, is still only slightly better than Marcus Wheaton's was, to be quite honest with you. But, he's a guy that can play in the slot. I'm much happier with him coming off the bench to do so, though. He's not a guy where I go into games looking to try to get him 50 snaps, okay? I think he's a number three to number four kind of wide receiver, to be honest with you, and I don't see that really changing. If he start making...
Well, that's what he was coming into the season, and I don't think that's any different now. It's more, you know, Juju has supplanted Martavis, and the question is Juju going to be coming out of the slot now? How are they going to – you know, we've thought of Juju as, I think, initially as more of an outside guy.
And we've written about that right from the get-go, that we thought he was he was going to eventually, sooner rather than later, get Rodgers' spot there. He is a versatile guy. He is a guy you can line up outside. But no. If you go back and read what Alex and I said and wrote.
Certainly he has the potential to do that. Where do you think he is long term?
Boy, he fits great in that Hines Ward role, does he not? I mean, you got a guy that can block, that can expose the middle of the field.
I agree. But I think that he can play both positions. I think longer. Well, I don't. You know, that's a good question. I don't know where I see him long term. I view him. Yes, the versatility is great. We've seen him do a bunch of different things, and obviously he's been successful at doing it. And Chris Collinsworth, by the way, I thought was excellent on the broadcast last night. A lot of the things that national guys are talking about, Dave and I have talked about. And if you're here and you watch the team, then that's what you do every week and season after season. It's not necessarily going to be earth-shattering stuff if you listen to the podcast. But the point is, Chris Collinsworth is doing this with all 32 teams. And I thought he hit a lot of the nuance and subtleties of the Steelers and the Lions as well in terms of what they're trying to do. But, you know, he certainly was effusive in his praise of Juju's blocking, which was spot on.
And look, you know, he is a guy that can play the Z, I guess. But, I mean, do you really want him, you know? I mean, we saw some wheels, you know, Sunday night. But make no mistake, he's not a guy that, you know, he's not that 6'4", 4'3", 4'4", guy, okay?
No, he's not Martavis Bryant.
Right, he is a guy that I think that, like I said, I think perfect for that Hines Ward role. Just wait till this guy starts running that choice route, gets on the same page with Ben on some of those, you know, on those option routes and all stuff that Hines Ward made a living at. And then yeah, can he probably play the X if need be? Absolutely, he can. Plus, he can block. So look. As excited as everybody should be about Juju Smith-Schuster right now, this guy still doesn't even know what he's doing yet. I mean,
yeah. Well, I know. I was going to say we should just all take a breath and think about what we were doing before our 21st birthday, because Juju is going to turn 21 here in the month of November. So just take a pause. Where were you when you're turning 21? Had you just scored your fourth NFL touchdown, the most in history by any player before the age of 21? Pretty good. We highlighted the fact that he was one of the youngest guys ever drafted by the Steelers, and the youngest guy in the league, and the youngest guy, blah, blah, blah. And he, you know, you talk about, you know, how quickly you're going to be able to figure it out and be an active member. Well, Juju, with all the stuff with the bike and everything else, going to the hockey game, playing hide and seek with the kids in the hockey game, Juju has he basically enshrined himself in the Pittsburgh Hall of Fame for popularity, because it has been a whirlwind 10 days for him. And boy, has he come out one of the biggest fan favorites we've seen, you know, almost ever, in terms of how quickly he's taken the city and the fan base by storm.
Boy, you can write a small documentary about this past week for Juju starting with that touchdown against the Bengals last week, and then culminating to the end of the game against the Lions there. I mean, you really could. So much has happened to him, and the fact that he's come out the other side with all of these. I mean, look, I mean, call them distractions, call them what you will, life in the National Football League. Face it, he's had a busy week, whether or not
It's unbelievable. Think about it, Dave. He catches the touchdown against the Bengals, and then he's in concussion protocol. So you don't know what his week's going to be like. And then we get the bikes. We had the celebration with the touchdown. We shouldn't leave that out, because that got a lot of – that probably put Juju's name on the national radar more than anything that's happened in his career. So that's the first – if you weren't a fantasy football player and you're a casual fan, you might not have heard of Juju until you saw that celebration.
And then Martavis Bryant concusses him on the internet.
Pops him on the internet. Perfect. That's a perfect line. Yeah, concusses him on the internet. I love that.
Okay.
And then he gets his bike stolen.
You would swear Martavis Bryant. You would swear Martavis Bryant had something to do with that if you didn't know any better. But wonder what he did with that $200.
You know, the bike thing is pretty damn funny because, you know, most 20-year-olds who get your bike stolen, you might not be putting that on the internet. Juju's out there putting it on the internet, having some fun with it. And as you said, you know, the bike company should have been hiring him immediately as their spokesperson. And so they get that. He gets the bike back. He's out of concussion protocol. He goes to the hockey game. Some kids want to play hide and seek with him. I don't know if maybe everybody didn't see that story, but goes to the hockey game. He's wearing a Penguin jersey. The crowd goes crazy. He's signing some autographs for a half an hour. Apparently people are just mobbing him. And then he's in the concourse and a couple of little kids, you know, 4 or 5 years old, it looks like, come up and ask if he'll play hide and seek with them. And he does. And he bends over, covers his eyes, and starts to count. And I guess it was just the greatest thing ever. So rock star popularity. And then obviously a not a perfect, but a pretty damn close to perfect performance in a huge performance career day, you know, in a historical day last night.
And yeah, don't forget, first primetime game of his career as well, too. Had the old interviews with the national media this week and had to talk about all that stuff and the Martavis Bryant stuff on top of it. So, you know, while we're talking about that long touchdown, hey, cover two situation there. 22-man, as Mike Tomlin liked to say, and Ben Roethlisberger says. Him and Roethlisberger evidently saw something earlier in the game. You know, he told Juju, look, next time just run, you know, don't worry so much about the juke. You got to get, split those safeties there. Probably the best deep ball we've seen Ben throw all year, not only lengthwise, but had some touch on it, on top of it. He had to throw
in stride.
He had to throw it where he gave Juju a chance to do something with it after the catch on top of it as well there. So, yeah, he had a drop later in the game on a key third down that he was kicking himself with. But, boy, who's the guy that they went to on the big call at the end of the game on the shovel pass there?
And the third down right prior to that, he made that catch on it, which wasn't a perfect – he had to go up and get that throw by Ben on the left sideline where, he was wide open. But, you know, wide open, you expect the quarterback to make it an easy catch. That was a good catch.
Absolutely. Now, look, here we are, midway point of this season. There's no doubt about it that this kid has been a pleasant addition to the Steelers. But, you know, the way I want to frame this right now is so far, so good, so what? You know, show us.
That's fair.
You know, show us
that's
more.
That's fair. Look.
Show us more.
And couple things. One is it was funny to see Juju's comment today on that you got asked why he was looking back behind himself. He said, I just see if somebody was catching me. I'm only like 82 or 83 speed-wise on Madden, these guys.
And you know what? I think Ben kind of put it best in his press conference. You know, maybe he's just so young he doesn't know damn better, you know, to be conscious of all.
Like hell.
Yeah, to be conscious of all this, you know? He's just playing football. You know, maybe he hasn't turned around to realize what's going on here.
Oh no, there is a beauty in the naivete of being 20, for sure. He's not concerned about PR. He's not concerned about, you know, kind of the media. He's just living life as a 20-year-old. It's great. And I think Steeler fans understand that, and they take a lot of joy and the fact that this isn't scripted bullshit. This is, hey, I'm 20 years old, man. I got the world by the cojones. This is pretty good.
It's good to be Juju Smith right now. And he admitted Juju Smith, as he said last night during his talk with the media there. Look, like I said, I mean, no denying what he's
done.
One
last thing, though, to finish that. He said on the Madden, he's 82, 83. He said, I didn't know if the guys were going to catch me or not. And, the beauty in that is I think there's a little truth in that as well. Like, he doesn't necessarily know how he stacks up in a straight sprint against NFL defensive backs. He's not in that position. Rarely are you in a dead sprint over an extended distance in the NFL with anybody. You know, it happens, obviously, but you've got to, you might be in a sprint without the ball, but you don't get the ball in the open field and get to run in a straight line and have guys chase you. I mean, just you think about how many times a year that happens over an extended distance, and it's probably for each team you get 3 to 5 opportunities like that. He got it for 70 yards. He got a chance to measure his wheels against, you know, 3 Lions defensive backs, and 2 of them were out of the play and 1 of them was there with him. But, you know, that guy's got to make up ground and he couldn't do it. So, you know, again, that was something that he probably never had that chance, and there he now he got it.
You know, you better get that. You know, there's an age-old saying, David, pigs don't know pig stink, you know? And there's a beauty to that. You know, they're not bothered by their stink because they don't know they stink. So sort of you can apply some of that to Juju. You know, a lot of it he doesn't know, you know, right now. So yeah, there is a beauty to the naivety there. And let's, you know, look, it's going to be fun to watch this guy go from rookie year to, you know, contract year, you know. And we've seen this year in, year out with fans. Oh, they love the guy when he's a rookie. Oh, but come time that he asks for for top dollar, he's the devil then, you know. So it'll be interesting. Look, even Hines Ward had his detractors, right? And how could you hate that smile, you know?
Let me just – Dave, I've got a fun little stat for you. 2016, Sammy Coates on the season, 21 catches, 435 yards. 2017, Juju Smith-Schuster, 24 catches, 424 yards. He's got 3 more catches, just a couple less yards here than Sammy had in the entire season last year. And, boy, you think about how Sammy fell off and how we expect only more from Juju. The Steelers – kudos to Kevin Colbert. I wanted to get to this later, but I mean, good gracious. We'll talk about Hargrave and what some of the other guys have done. But Juju Smith-Schuster looks like another Steeler wide receiver, huge winning pick, non-first-round pick, where they find a quality wideout.
And they're going to draft another one here this year as well, too, coming up.
Yes, they are. So here's my question to you. Juju, 24 for 424 on the season. Does he get to 50 and 1,000?
Oh, he's not 250 and 1,000 by when?
Does he get to, on the season, does he get to 50 receptions? He's at 24 at the halfway point, and he's at 424 yards. Does he get to 50 catches and 1,000 yards?
He's not going to get to 1,000 yards. I'll be surprised if he gets to 1,000 yards, David.
So you don't think he'll get, he had 424 in the first half. You don't think he'll have you don't think he could have 570 in the second?
Oh, well, I think he can push that 50 catch mark, obviously. Yeah, it would be quite an accomplishment, though, if he went 50 for 1,000, didn't he? Wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think he's got, I'm put him at 50. I think, yeah, it's for a good guess. 55, 950, something like that. 500 yards in the second half on 30 catches.
Yeah, because let's not forget that one of those catches right now and is 97 yards. And that,
no doubt.
Yeah, no doubt. That definitely skews those numbers.
Sure does. Okay, so let's get into a little bit more of the game and how things went in terms of the sequence of things. The Steelers, the Lions come down, they get their field goal. And why don't we do it right now? Because I would hate to kind of not give Matthew Stafford his due. You and I talked before we got on air about Matt Stafford, and we both think he's, maybe it's an overstatement to say, criminally underrated. But because Matt Stafford was the first pick in the draft, because Matt Stafford has twice gotten to be the highest paid player in the NFL, the expectations have always been extraordinary for Matt Stafford. We came into this game talking about how it was Matt Stafford and a bunch of guys. I don't know how you can walk away from this game not thinking Matt Stafford is one of the, you know, whatever you want to call, elite or top 10. But to me, he is a top 10 NFL quarterback, has been for a while. Dave, I would, you know, I think he's fantastic.
As Hines Ward likes to say, you have to take your hat off and hand it to him. He was what we thought he was in this game, and just as we described it, it was Matthew Stafford and a bunch of guys on offense. And if he had, what if he had Megatron for this game yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, even Galladay. I mean, you know, they're, you know, can you imagine?
And look, they did a good job of taking the Steelers kind of to the woodshed on some of these deep passes or, you know, explosive plays anyway. But imagine if he would have had a legitimate, you know, red zone threat, if you will, and say a guy like Calvin Johnson there really would have been the difference in the ball game there. So, yeah, look, I mean, people forget. I understand all the frustration everybody listening to this podcast has about the Steelers' pass defense getting exposed Sunday night. That, oh my God, how the hell are we going to beat? They're already worried about a playoff game that's not even on the schedule yet, okay? Worry about that when it gets here. Yes, they did have problems, but a lot of people forget that the other team is paid to make plays. And a guy like Matthew Stafford is going to get you every now and then. Now, did he get them probably three or four more times than probably what he should have? Yes, there were some blown coverages there. Joe Hayden a couple of times for sure. Artie Burns early in the game. You flush a quarterback out of the pocket like that, it's kind of hard to stay plastered. Okay, he kind of snuck a look down deep, and it just got run away from on the back end. And when a quarterback's got time like that, he's going to do that. On two of the catches that T.J. Jones had for 50.
Guy, we didn't even talk about.
Yeah, we didn't even preview that guy. Two of the catches that he had for something like 58, 59 yards, those were cover two hole shots. Sure, put the blame on Mike Mitchell. Rightly so. But where those balls are thrown against a cover two and a hole shot, that's tough for his safety to get
almost
there.
Almost impossible to get to the sideline. You're not making the read,
you've got a break on that. I mean, you've got on 20-yard passes. Yeah,
You got to be shading that way. You can't get there on a 45-yard pass down the sideline. Yeah, on a 25-yard shot when Hayden steps up and is looking into the flat because another guy might be filling that area. You just can't get there the way Matt Stafford throws the ball.
Right, and even if you want to put, okay, we don't care, Dave and Dave. We want to put it squarely on Mike Mitchell on those two plays. Absolutely, have at it on him. But don't forget to make sure to take the paddle to Joe Hayden, and take the paddle to Artie Burns as well, because you know they were responsible for some big plays in this game. And then you might as well call the helmet-to-helmet hit on Sean Davis, an explosive play as well, too, because that ball after that penalty was, you know, another 50, almost 30 yards down the field after where it was originally spotted, as well. So there were issues, and you have to applaud Matthew Stafford and those receivers for finding them. And look, let's not forget that Golden Tate gave him a gift too against who was that? Who did he beat there? Was that Sean Davis over the top on the one that he caught it and then fumbled?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly. I think Sean Davis was in there. I mean, sure. The mistakes, as we step back now again and look at the mistakes made in this game. We both were talking about them during the game. I mean, you think of for the Steelers, you have Eli Rogers drops a touchdown. Ben, and I don't know if you got a chance to look at it again, Dave. I know you were wondering if DHB pulled up, but Ben and DHB don't hook up on a – you'll never see a guy – it would look like Chris Hogan in the AFC Championship game last year. You'll rarely see a guy that open in the end zone, and, you know, he can't even get a fingertip on the ball. So that's 8 points the Steelers leave on the board right there without, you know, not getting touchdowns. The Steelers, Le'Veon Bell turns it over when he gets a first down on a third and one. Ben, a very kind of ill-advised choice, throwing over two defenders with safety help behind on the interception that he had there. Those are the Steelers' mistakes. The Lions' mistakes. I mean, you know, Ebron drops the ball in the end zone, which people's, you know, I know people want to give Sean Davis credit for the breakup there, but Ebron had actually dropped the ball before Davis got his hand in. The turnover by Golden Tate, which was huge play in the game. All their failed conversions, I'm sure they look at as mistakes. So, I mean, this was not a there were some great plays made, and there were also some, you know, some horrible plays in this game as well by both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when you go back and when you opened up talking about, you know, look at the stat sheet and all like that, what's the age old thing we like to go back to? Is we like to go back to explosive plays and turnover differential from the Tox stat there. And if you look at the Tox alone, well, what was the turnover differential? One, the Lions.
Yeah, two once. Steelers turned it over twice. Lions once.
Okay, if you look at explosive play differential, the Lions had 8. The Steelers had 4. Okay, so. Plus 5 in the Tox for the Lions. If you would have gave me those stats,
what does that come out to typically? Is that a 90%er?
Well, plus
historically,
plus two.
I know you look at that.
Yeah, plus two or better is 80%. 80% of the games with a team with plus two win games. I don't know what the number on plus five is, but I guarantee it's higher than 80%.
More than 80.
Yeah, I didn't even have to take my shoes off for that one.
Right. That goes back, you know, with the Steelers the better team. You know, that goes back to, you know, that's basically that question, and that's a good way to answer it. When 80%, when you have those types of statistics, and it's 80% the other way, well, that would suggest they weren't the better team. So, okay, so let's get into the Steelers' offense. What did you think of the Steelers' offensive performance, particularly the run game, which was erratic at best?
I kept thinking how much I miss Vance McDonald.
Man, that's, you know what? Vance McDonald probably in not playing gained more fans than any game he's played this year.
No, he didn't. All people want to do is remember the drops. That's all they want to do.
So he gained more fans. Gained more fans from not playing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. And I can't listen well. Much like most of my readers can't comprehend what we write. But look, it was not Roosevelt Nick's best game of the season. I'll start with that. When I don't know how you feel about this, but I think when Vance McDonald gets healthy after the bye, I think there's reason to maybe suggest that Vance should be the number one in 11 personnel groupings over Jesse. Jesse just too many fails in the run game out of 11 personnel. And if there's one thing this Steelers offense has done this season, it's moved the football well when Vance McDonald's been on the field. And generally when Roosevelt Nix has been on the field as well, too. That wasn't the case. I don't think we saw DeCastro or Foster pull much, if any, in this game. I think we saw Pouncey pull a couple of times to his left, I think. Not very successful in the grand scheme of things, if memory serves me. They did not have a good successful run rate in this game at all. And even at one of their plays that was a successful run, Le'Veon Bell fumbles on it. So, you know, there needs to be a stat for that. That was an unsuccessful, successful run. How about that? No, the running game was not there. And they had to rely a lot on the passing game. And even then, it was hit and miss.
Yeah, it was hit and miss. And at the end of the numbers, if you look at them, at the end of the day, they averaged less than 3 yards a carry without Ben's kneel downs. Yeah, Le'Veon Bell was 25 for 76. That's, you know, essentially 3 yards a carry right there. And Connor had one carry for a yard. We didn't see Watson at all. So, look, Le'Veon Bell didn't look bad, didn't look good. He just was not a huge factor in this game, although we did see red zone success. And when we saw them again, they had an opportunity. They get down there at the five-yard line. It's a first down. And, you know, people know that the struggles that the Steelers have had. They go shotgun. And they spread it out a little bit, and Le'Veon Bell goes right up the middle with a huge hole, not untouched, but gets into the end zone no problem on a five-yard run. So it was good to see the success there. But, yeah, this was a running game that was, I would say, you know, give it kind of a C overall in terms of performance.
And, look, 1 of 3 inside the red zone. I mean, we're talking inches away from 3 for 3, right?
Yeah, you have Eli's drop and you
DHB
was it right? Hayward Bay was it that same possession. So opportunity certainly it wasn't play calling that held them back, it was execution.
Right. I mean that, you know, Ben was better in certain phases. He still looked there's no excuse from him staring down Antonio on that interception. He missed out. Boy, Jesse James, how do you miss that throw? Luckily, he did, though, because the very next play was to Juju. So thank heavens for small snafus, if you will.
Small mistakes. So let's talk about Ben in the passing game. What would you give Ben? Average, below average? Look, Ben made a nice throw to Juju, who then goes 50 yards kind of on his own. I don't think you can give Ben a good grade because of one pass.
Yeah, but the passes to Eli and Darius Hayward Bay would be, I mean, those are game changers.
Yeah, I guess the Eli one should have been caught. To me, watching it the couple times I've watched it, I put the Hayward Bay on Ben. Now, maybe it'll come up differently. But when it's that open, the quarterback's got to put it up so he can catch it. To me, that's a Ben. Ben missed, not a DHB miss.
The one hop over to the side was a bad throw on the screen. I'm not sure if that one slipped out of his hands. Can you remember all the incompletions? We already talked about opening the game to Juju with that long one there. The incomplete one, short right to Bell on that early drive. I'm trying to remember which one that is. Definitely overthrew James in the third quarter there ahead of the one to
that was I don't understand what happened on that throw either, because nobody in his face, kind of big, lots of space in the middle of the field. And just when he's missing that bad, you do wonder when he's missing that badly, you do wonder if there's something else, because we're not used to seeing that. I mean, that's, you know, that and the DHB ball. Those two balls, and I get, you know, he shook his head after that, the first pass of the second half, that pass to AB out in the sideline. You know, the camera came right back to him, and he was shaking his head. It just makes you wonder, like, did just the ball come out of his hand badly, or, you know, is there something else going on? Because when he's missing, he just doesn't seem to have – the one he zipped into AB for the touchdown was maybe his second best throw of the night, the one that got called back, the offensive pass interference. That ball had some zip. It was right on the numbers. We're just not seeing a lot of that during the course of games.
What about that one to Jesse James? That couldn't believe that Jesse,
over the middle?
That Jesse caught it.
Yeah, there were a couple guys there. I want to look at that in the All-22 and see if somebody, if there was some confusion in the route, because it looked like he was throwing to Jesse, but there was another Steeler there and a couple of Lions right there. And boy, nice job by Jesse running, because when he broke free there, he did a good job of setting up a block and getting to the sideline and getting 10 extra yards. But he a really nice job of setting up the block, which, by the way, the block that the Lions set up, whoever it was, to just absolutely ear hole. Was it Sean Davis? Who got ear holed for the Steelers? You remember the play where I was wondering if it's one of those blocks where they say, you know, the guy's completely defenseless. Do you remember the play where some Steeler got laid out?
I'm trying to remember. No, not right off the top of my head.
A lion caught the ball in the middle of the field, running to the far sideline, and he had another receiver there who just stood there and waited. and the guy set up the block so that he went around the guy. Steeler never saw it coming and got laid out.
No, I mean,
it was.
Oh, I had to pick that up on the next time. All right. Well, I mean, let's look at
Ben. So give me your answer to Ben's proposal.
Right. Look, I mean, should have been a touchdown to Juju. Should have been a touchdown to DHB. I mean, not Juju. Eli, a touchdown to DHB. You had a very easy drop by Juju later in the game. Seems like I'm missing one other drop as well. Look, I mean, you throw – Justin Hunter is about
– Justin Hunter having to come across the field?
Yeah, he hit him on one of those.
Drop on top one.
Yep. I don't remember. One of those ones was deep. Justin Hunter's about useless as – I don't know. But
he's useless. What was he doing on that long ball down that he couldn't find it? Turned his head, right?
I don't know. I want to see that one on the All-22 as well, too. In a word, David, look, this was by far – I mean, it wasn't Ben's worst performance of the season, okay? At all. He made some good throws in this game. Paddling for the interception, obviously. And, you know, the overthrow on Jesse, you know, on that one. But he's definitely had worse games.
Okay, so the receivers, AB, got nondescript game from Antonio Brown. There's going to be two schools of thought on the long pass down the field to Antonio Brown that he caught for 40 yards. One is Ben kind of chuck and duck, just kind of threw it out there. Two is, and I do think this is where I fall in, is, yeah, Ben just threw it up there, but he threw it up there into the middle of the field with a safety on AB, knowing that there was no other help for the Lion player. And that's exactly when you want to do that type of thing. It looks like, you know, I know there was some Matt Williamson, who I'm very fond of, who I think does a great job and was a regular guest on my show, said, you know, Stafford in this game, he tweeted that Stafford's very high level quarterback play and Ben's not. Too often it feels like he's just throwing it in the direction of Antonio Brown and hoping for the best. I think there's some truth to that statement. I will say on that play down the middle of the field, that's exactly when you want to do that. Because when Antonio Brown has single safety coverage in this type of structure that the Lions were playing on that play, you'll take that chance every time.
Yeah, oh boy, that guy just how he adjusted to that one and stuck right up underneath that. Yeah, I mean, there's still a minor element of knowing who's on your team and who's on the other team with Ben. You know, sometimes.
Yes.
You know, sometimes you give your guy the opportunity to make the play. That pass interference a little ticky tack, but I understand why AB was called on that one as well.
I agree. Ticky tack. I thought.
I'm not upset about it though, by any stretch of the imagination. There. Offensive line, you know, look, I mean, Ben hasn't taken a sack since the first quarter of the Kansas City Chiefs game, so make of that what you will. It'd be nice to get Marcus Gilbert back and get Chris Hubbard back over there as the extra tackle there. Nothing hugely egregious, I didn't think there. Bell had some nice blitz pickups, I thought. Two of them, I think, in particular, on offense as well. Like I said, Jesse's run blocking just misses way too many times, I think. What is your view on it? You think Vance McDonald should get a shot at the number one spot in 11 personnel or no?
It's interesting because I just feel like the Steelers, when they have the capability, really like to play 12 personnel. And so I think there'll be plenty of room for both of them. Whether you want to call it 1A, 1B or 2A, 2B, I think they'll end up kind of splitting. They'll both be out there the same number of snaps, I would assume, going forward. But yes, I do agree Vance McDonald is the better blocker, and it's not close. And receiving talent, I mean, you know, maybe Jesse has a slight edge still to be determined on that.
Yeah, I mean, Vance can get down the field and get separation. We saw that, you know, in the game against the Bengals. The only thing is, the issue with him is, can he hold on to the damn football, you know?
Yep.
But, you know, look, like I said, Roosevelt Nick's not his best game. We could go through it individually here. But they got to start converting these third downs earlier in the game. They got to start punching the ball into the end zone instead of taking threes. I mean, it's a week in, week out thing here. For one reason or the other, they're not, you know, they're not getting that ball in the end zone. And in the first half, they're missing opportunities to really get opposing offenses out of what they like to do. Imagine being up, 14 points, 13 points at halftime over the Lions in this game, and how much it might shaped things maybe in the second half, where Stafford's got to throw every down. You know, that kind of thing. So their ineptitude on offense is hurting the defense by proxy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, although Stafford did throw most of the downs in the second half. You know, Dave, we've seen the Steelers defense. It was a little bit of a 180 this week. We've seen the Steelers defense in their two losses get gouged by the run and give up 100 passing yards and say, good God, how do you lose a game when the opposing quarterback completes 8 passes or, you know, attempts 10 passes or whatever it may be in the two games they lost? Nothing through the air. This game was obviously the exact opposite. Ameer Abdullah didn't do much running the football. The Steelers and their front seven did a very good job of stuffing the run, a lot of tackles for loss or no gain, but they did not look good at pass defense. And one, as there was a lot of talk about Brian Mihalik coming into this game and how he was going to be just abused. Chris Collinsworth pointed it out, how the whole offensive line, the Lions last time out before the bye, just got mauled by, I think, the Chiefs, whoever they played 2 weeks ago. And the Steelers, honestly, you know, there was a time or two where Stafford slipped out of the pocket or they missed him, but the Steelers didn't do a great job of getting pressure. And you know, at the same time, the Steelers also blew some cut. You know, Stafford, we gave him his praise like we gave Case Keenum his praise. Steelers blew some coverages, and that's coming out of this game, if you're the coaching staff, that's probably the biggest concern is, look, when Artie looks into the backfield and the guy runs behind him, you keep trying to teach him. But when guys blow coverages and guys are wide open in parts of the field a couple times, that's probably the largest concern I would think that Keith Butler and the staff have today.
Yeah, you know, one of those on early Alton or one of those on Hayden looked like he guessed, you know, and then then got
not his best game either, huh? First time he's had a bad game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, let's hold off putting him in the Steelers Ring of Honor just yet. You know, I know a lot of people. And look, I love the signing. I still do. And people are like, Dave, can you admit that you underestimated the addition of Joe Hayden? Look, I said, all along, and Alex Cazora will agree with me. Alex was lower, was much lower, I think, on the signing of Joe Hayden than I was. It was obvious that this was going to be an upgrade over Ross Cockrell. Okay,
but you weren't getting. You weren't getting an all-pro corner, and you're not. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. You're not. Look, I mean, we've still seen a lot of zone stuff here right now, too. Do we really know how good Joe Hayden is in man yet? We're going to find out later in the season. For all of you out there listening and saying, Steelers are, what's changed? It's just going to all end the same against the Patriots when, in the playoffs. Hold your horses here a little bit,
it might.
Yeah, if you go in there and thinking you're going to play 80, 90% zone against Tom Brady and get home with a three-man rush, you're kidding yourself. Absolutely. But let's worry about getting beat by the Patriots, when they get beat by the Patriots. For now, let's look at what it is right now. Their pass rush has been good enough, although last night, you really didn't see that. Boy, Mihalik did a great job, did he not? I mean, I can't wait to watch all 22. But I never felt there were let me tell you.
He did not get abused on one play that we saw. He didn't get abused.
He didn't look like the Brian Mahalik who played less than 30 snaps against the New Orleans Saints prior to the bye week, giving up a lot of deep pressures there. And, yeah, I thought he played good. And you know, is that is that something you need to put on T.J. Watt? Look, James Harrison didn't play a single damn snap in that game. I'm a bit surprised by that.
Well, okay, let's answer that one because our listeners are going to want to know what the hell's going on. How does James Harrison go from making plays against the Chiefs to getting again kind of whatever it was, seven snaps against the Bengals to not seeing the field? And as I think it was Mark Caboli pointed out, which you wouldn't know unless you're in the stadium, sitting on the sideline talking to Antonio Brown when the Steelers defense is on the field, which means you're not going in. I don't know if there's an injury or what, but as anybody knows who watches the games, players who potentially can be in the game, whether through injury or sub-package football, stand around Keith Butler and the other defensive coaches when the Steelers have the ball right at the point where those guys, collect near Mike Tomlin, because you got to be ready to go on the field. This means Harrison knew he wasn't even going to be going on the field for injury. It was going to be Chicolo or Motes. And we saw Motes in this game. Now, we can talk about what side guys play. But again, this might be the most confusing thing now that we've seen about James Harrison. Early in the season, you say, okay, you want the young guys to play. They're doing a good job. Why have James Harrison? But seeing James Harrison be effective against the Chiefs, and then again having his time reduced, and now not having his time reduced, not being an option is what it sounds like. That's confusing to me, Dave.
Well, the fact of the matter is they want to drop T.J. Watt quite a bit in coverage and move him around in coverage quite a bit. You're not going to get you got to admit T.J. Watt has great one hell of a nice depth drop when he does
that had to be a perfect throw by Stafford. They did highlight that play where Watt drops. He not only gets back and is in good position in coverage, in a bracket coverage, he jumps like crazy. And it was a perfect throw by Stafford. It wasn't complete. But if he throws that ball, we saw T.J. Watt make that interception against the Browns in week one. I mean, it's that type of thing, that kind of athleticism that obviously is attractive to the Steelers. And it means they can show a lot. And the answer for people wondering about this, they can show a lot more looks and deception to the quarterback. And this was featured on NFL Matchup this week. If you see that show, that half-hour show with Lewis Riddick and Greg Cosell, it's an excellent show. It's not long enough, but it's an excellent show. They were featuring how the Steelers of their front seven, and obviously Mike Hilton or whoever in the secondary might come as well, how they disguise things and can rotate, which just makes the read more difficult for the corner or for the quarterback.
And look, James Harrison played. What did he play in the first half in that game of the Chiefs? Do you remember how many snaps I counted in that first half? It wasn't many of them, like eight. It was like something like 70, and I think he had played nine by the end of the third quarter, because that was a play that Mike Mitchell got the penalty on. Then he really started, I think, ramping it up a little. Where he played, I forget what the number was that he played in the first half of that game. It wasn't a lot, four or five snaps or something like that, and then ramped it up really after that penalty late in the third quarter. I guess what I'm getting at is, those final couple of Lions drives, when you know that they're going to have to throw the football, I could it wouldn't hurt my feelings, I don't guess, to see James Harrison out there going up against a guy like Brian Mahalik. I mean, that poor kid would have shat his pants.
Although he's probably seen him plenty in practice, so it wouldn't be completely a new experience.
Yeah, but when you think about it, Mahalik was, I'm trying to think here. How much did Mahalik go up against James Harrison in practices during training?
Well, since Harrison never practiced, maybe not so much,
Right. And then if you go back to last year, I guess Mahalik from what was it, October to the end of the season, was on the 53-man roster. So I suppose there's some familiarity there. But look at me, he's a big boy like Fisher is too. That's a lot of surface space for a small guy like James Harrison, right? So
Do you have an answer? I assume somebody asked that we should talk on the Monday podcast what questions I would ask Mike Tomlin. Well, this would be an obvious one. James Harrison didn't play, and it appears that he wasn't even going to be part of the rotation at any point because he was sitting on the sideline. What's going on? Do you have even a guess? Because I don't have a good guess, Dave.
My guess is that they really wanted to use the athleticism of the other linebackers, Chickalo, Moats. What they wanted to do, they didn't want to give Matthew Stafford the opportunity to catch James Harrison in a drop, you know, or coverage over the middle or something like that, you know.
I think that's as good an answer as any. I don't have a better one, that's for sure.
That's the only thing I can come up with. I wish I had a better answer, but you know that.
Okay, let me ask you another question. What about following in the same line of thinking here? We saw Anthony Chickalo get a fair number of snaps early in the season, particularly the first 2 weeks of the season. We've seen that. You know, then we saw when Dupree was fully healthy, he kind of came in and was taking most of the snaps. We haven't seen a lot from, we saw some good stuff in that Bengals game in that fourth quarter when he got to tee off and kind of back-to-back plays against Andy Dalton. But, you know, he hasn't been a huge factor. We haven't seen a lot of his name. He played most of the snaps yesterday, I think 67 out of a possible 71. So he was on the field. But we did see Arthur Motes on the field for 5 snaps. We only saw Chickalo for 8. Is it the issue of, we're going to play our 2 best guys. They're young guys. We're not worried about subbing them unless, you know, just for like we'll do with, the defensive line. We'll give you a series here and there. So it's these 2 guys are going to be the guys.
Yeah, these 2 guys are the guys, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And the other, every 4th series or so, maybe, you know, or long drives, you know, rotate those guys out, you know, but, those are you guys. That's what you drafted those guys to be, you know?
Robert Golden, 33 snaps. J.J. Wilcox, 1 snap. Did that surprise you?
Not really, being as how I think Wilcox is probably a better box safety than he is a free, free safety.
Yep. He's more in the Mike Hilton mold of how he plays as opposed to Mike Mitchell mold.
Yeah. I mean, look, he can play both spots, but I think that's just, I think that's the thinking there. Robert Gold has a little bit more experience with the Steelers covering the center field. So, that's why I view that happen.
Okay. Let me get to a guy that we've started to talk about the past couple of weeks. Javon Hargrave got 39 snaps, which was 55% yesterday. Is it fair to say that certainly Javon Hargrave is not a guy anybody nationally is going to probably know who he is? Has he now, Dave, developed into – let me ask it in a Steeler perspective. I think we both think the world of Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt. Tuitt's issue here, we've seen both those guys miss time due to injury. Cam missed the second half last year. Tuitt's now missed 3 games this year and has missed some time before. Is Javon Hargrave – now, can you say when he's on the field, he's at the level of those 2 guys? Is he that good a player already?
I think he needs a little bit more season, but there's no doubt he gets great jumps off the snap. He can swim centers, I think, with the best of them out there right now. He can be disruptive against the run. Plays reasonably, does a good job outside zone, staying square and running down the line of scrimmage, keeping his feet. You're definitely not disappointed with him right now.
No, I think he's been great. I really think he's been outstanding.
I'm not sure you're putting him up there with a Cameron Hayward or a Stephon Tuitt just yet, but he's almost there. And remember, this guy normally sees most of his snaps in base offense too, which generally he faces probably a lot more runs than he does fat passes.
Yep, and some double teams in there as well. Okay, how about, I feel like saying I want to criticize the defense because I really do think the pass defense wasn't good, but I think there were some good individual performances. Has Vince Williams become more than just a guy?
Nah, he's still just a guy. he's playing well. Don't get me wrong. What we said at the top.
He's a thumper.
Right. What we said at the top of the season, if the Steelers' defense goes south, we're not going to be able to just single-handedly point a finger at Vince Williams.
Vince Williams and Ross Cockrell are going to be the reason.
Right. I think he's playing well. I mean, you obviously don't want him running down the middle of the field with people. You want him playing. You want him playing downhill is when he's at the best. He had a couple of nice pops, I thought, in that game. What was it? One near the goal line, wasn't it?
Goal line. Yeah, he and Hargrave made that huge hit on the goal line. It was a big play. Tyson Alulu getting Matt Stafford as he broke through the line of scrimmage from the five, trying to get in the end zone on the fourth down play. Two things. One is,
What about Tyson Alulu? He's played some decent ball, hasn't he?
Both Tyson Alulu and LT Walton are solid rotational guys. I mean, no doubt of the free agent signings. The Steelers, Mike Hilton was a find, but Tyson Alulu, this guy was the number 10th overall pick, number 10 overall pick. He was a first round pick. He's not a non pedigree guy, but he certainly has been a high value guy for the Steelers. No doubt. That he's done a good job.
He's an upgrade over Ricardo Matthews, and he's three times.
Who was an upgrade over Cam Thomas?
Right, he's three times the player Cam Thomas was for sure. Just go back. I posted a GIF of this last week on Twitter late in the week. Him handling that double team against the Bengals. There, little things like that don't show up in the box score, and he's able to anchor well against those type of things. And the running back runs right in the back of the offensive lineman. He didn't get the tackle on the play, but somebody else did, those kind of things. A big play on the Matthew Stafford fourth down play there. A couple other early walk the square up on the offensive lineman, get separation and make the tackle there. So what a great find that guy is, and he's under contract one more year past this year on top of it. So that gives you a little bit of comfort knowing that you don't have to go into this next draft thinking, man, I got to get a 5-tech defensive end, three/5-tech defensive end in the first two rounds of this draft because, we got a Lulu under contract. And look, LT.
And LT.
LT is what he is, but LT's shown a few good things here and there. I don't know if him not beating, getting beat on those bootlegs is him recognizing.
Well, he does. I will say it's consistent. He does stay at home.
Yeah.
He does stay at home.
Yeah. Calls
That's a very funny comment. For those who don't know where Dave's going is there have been four or five plays this year where, a lot of times you'll see the defensive end crash down on the line of scrimmage. And James Harrison does that from the linebacker spot. I mean, it's a common thing, and you'll see some of the young quarterbacks go back to running read option. They're reading that crash down from the end, and LT Walton has, quarterbacks have turned on this kind of rollout that way on a fake naked bootleg, and LT's standing there right in their mug. Four or five times.
Yeah, what the hell are you doing here? You ain't supposed to be here. Chris Collins said, well, normally you see the defensive line flow, this way. Well, that's like the second or third time this year that LT's been standing out there like the kid in The Shining or whatnot,
You're spot on though, man. You are dead right about that. So let me ask you. So
he's not. Hey, remember that old every time you remember that old Bud Ice commercial with the penguin out there, doobie doobie doo. That's LT Walton out there on there.
LT Walton. You'll have to make a little gif of that. That guy LT Walton out there by himself. So what's the answer to why? Why Matt Stafford threw for 411? Not enough pressure on the. I mean, is it simple? Just not enough pressure on the quarterback and some blown coverages.
Yes.
And he's a good quarterback.
Yes. Is there an all of the above option?
Yeah. All of. Bug, right.
Some defensive breakdowns, for sure. Pressure not as good as what it's been for sure, you know, over the last several weeks. And that guy can wing it, on top of it. Some capable receivers on top of it. So I think you throw all that stuff together. I think the most worrisome part is the amount of times that he was able to do it more than anything else. You can stomach,
yes.
You can stomach, yes, four explosive plays and us be talking about, well, two of them are breakdowns and two of them, Matthew Stafford had the whole shot there against Mike Mitchell. Okay. I think it's just the volume, that gets you the most, I think, in there, you know, eight explosive plays, pass plays is a lot of pass plays, you know, and if you don't equal that on your side of the offense and you lose a turnover battle, like we said, there's a good chance you're going to lose that. The difference of that game was a 97-yard touchdown. Let's not beat around the bush here. That was the difference of the ball game right there.
Right. Both teams fumbled deep in the other team's territory with Tate and Bell's fumble. We can go through it all again. So a couple other things here. Jordan Berry, finally a good game. He had a chance to punt from deep in his own end a couple times and had some good punts. Obviously, Agnew looks incredibly explosive for the Lions. You talk about a guy who just made you freeze when he had the ball in his hands. Only returned twice, but for 10 and 11 yards, and it was dangerous both times. So a guy to just watch going forward about how good he might be with two returns for touchdown already. Dave, Antonio Brown returning punts. I mean, I hate to pick on one particular play, but you're catching a ball at your own 45 with 10 yards of room in front of you. I mean, that's why you're back there. You got to do something with that ball, right?
Yeah. Boy, been disappointing again. The returns in general.
Again.
Right?
Again. Right.
I mean, when's the last time that we, you know, I understand they went out and tried to get Jacoby, you know, Jones, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, whatever it was. You know, Dree Archer was supposed to be this and that and not. I can't wait till rosters get expanded by about three more guys where you can go out and have a specialist for that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's been disappointing, him and Eli Rogers both, regardless of which one's back there, regardless of whoever's returning kickoffs. You know, you're really almost praying for a touchback, to be quite honest with you. You know, that way nobody messes up.
Yeah, look, I'm a little surprised Mike hasn't given Eli Rogers another shot. Yes, I understood he had a fumble, but, you know, guys draw passes, guys fumble the football. Le'Veon Bell fumbled the football. Look, you put guys back there, and if AB's just back there for sure hands, okay, that's fine. But, you know, that was an opportunity. Steelers went three and out on that drive, and I felt like that was an opportunity for Antonio Brown to take 15 yards straight up the field and almost put them in field goal position without having to do anything. And he fair caught it, and the Steelers, you know, went three and out and had to punt it back. That was disappointing for me. That was really kind of the, other than Barry playing well, was the only thing that stood out special teams wise. And then it comes down to, Dave, you know, the coaching decisions here were all on the Lions. And as you know, I'm a big fan of going forward on fourth down. I'm a big fan for being aggressive down by the goal line. We can debate forever whether Jim Caldwell should have gone forward on the fourth down, the first fourth down, where the Lions could have taken a 15-13 lead. And they got stuffed when Stafford got stuffed, I think, if I have my plays sequenced correctly. I think, Matt, that he made it – maybe that was the second one. I think he made a terrible mistake to kick the field goal at 20-12. Because down eight in the middle of the fourth quarter, I don't know what that 3 points really does for you. I think, you know, debating all the decisions guys make, to me, that it was the really bad mistake. Is he should have gone for the touchdown there, because that's a game changing play, because then a field goal can win you the game regardless of whether you make the 2 point conversion. And if you make the 2 point conversion, you're in a tied position, everything's going your way. Kicking a field goal there just really seemed to be a poor decision. That's a poor probability math model game situation decision.
Yeah, I mean, you got to know that your offense is moving the ball. So you have to take, in my opinion, if you're that confident in your offense being able to move the ball, then you're saying, I'll be back here again. So that's why I think I would have, the first fourth down that they went for it twice on fourth down there deep, right?
They went for it a couple times, and then the last time they kicked the field goal.
Right. I would have taken a field goal first.
They probably should have done it opposite, right.
On that first fourth down. Right. All right, second and six from the Steelers, 12-yard line, 1:50 left in the game. Are you okay throwing the football?
I liked the call. I didn't like the execution because it looked bad. The Lions had three timeouts. They'd used it, so it's two-minute warning. Steelers go up first down. They run the ball. The Lions use their first timeout. The Lions are loaded for the run here. And if you're going to throw, maybe you want to throw play action on first down, but you definitely want them using a timeout, a safe play action on first down. But I like the call on second down. It's just, again, disappointing to see Ben, throw it 20 yards down the field and still he and Antonio Brown not be on the same page. That's where you want a really safe pass play, a rollout, something simple. So I liked the pass call. I didn't like the play per se, and obviously the execution was terrible. But you were gonna have to throw the ball to win the game, which they ended up doing. They get that pass to Juju on third down. So my answer is I didn't have a problem with it. I know I'm probably in the minority.
Well, you're second and six. If you're passing on second and six, you're damn sure passing on third and six, right? They didn't. Eli Rogers drew. And look, that was a good call.
Sorry. I had my plays wrong. I said Juju's catch on the sideline. It was right. He got held. It was a legit call.
Right. It was a legit call. He was getting separation. He was going to make that. He's going to make that catch.
If he didn't drop it.
He was running pretty good until the engine blew up. Had a fast car today.
Had a great car. I'd like to thank Valvoline, the Goodyear tires.
Yeah. Coca-Cola. All right, after that, first and 10, Bell left tackle for 6 yards. You forced them to use their second timeout. Second and four, you knew they were going to run then with 1:34 left to make them burn their final timeout.
And I liked that, too, because then you have 40 seconds no matter what you do on third down.
Right.
Yeah, well. No, unless you have an incompletion, obviously.
Yeah, unless you have an incomplete shuffle pass to Juju. But it was absolutely the right call to Juju on that play.
What were you thinking when he's breaking left and Antonio Brown's kind of not in the mix anymore? Were you thinking, what the hell's going on here? I sure was. When that play, as the play unfolded, the very first thing through my mind, the first second was, what is actually going to happen here? Because I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, I don't remember what was going through my head there, to be honest with you. But it was easy, like we said in a previous show, you need about six or seven of those gotta have it 90%, 98% sure it's gonna work 2 yard, 4 yard plays every week,
They found one.
Yeah, and use them every week too, and draw up more of them. During the next week kind of thing. It's a W, and you go into the bye week 6-2, top AFC. You get the Colts on the road after a bye, a team that we expect not to have Andrew Luck, a team that really they should be able to blow out of the building. I'm not picking them to score 30 points until, they actually do. But, look, this team's next hard game technically isn't until what? Baltimore?
Depending on what you think of the Titans. I mean, it is Thursday night at home. That's obviously a big advantage for the Steelers, but it's Thursday, right? Yeah. That should be an interesting game. Mariota should be healthy, and I'm not going to roll over that one.
Yeah, it could be one of those ones that if you don't stop the run.
I think the Packers might be. The Packers might be easier than the Titans, assuming Aaron Rodgers isn't going to be playing. So I think the Packers without Aaron Rodgers might be easier than the Titans.
All right, so they go Colts, Titans, Packers, Bengals, Ravens, Patriots, Texans, and Browns. What's their second half record, David?
I'll just ditto it again. I'll go 6-2. with 12-4 that they say they lose to the Patriots and they lose one of the division games between the Ravens and the Bengals.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know. That Houston Texas game is looking pretty exciting this
far. Oh, right. Yeah.
This far out.
What week
right?
Is that? Is that 16? Is that week 16?
Yeah, that's week 16. Hopefully, boy, it should be nice to have that locked, have something locked up, even though they won't. They'll definitely be still playing for something in week 16.
Sure.
I don't know. If you beat the Patriots and you have a two game, no, you still have to play regardless. But, but it.
If you beat the Patriots. If you beat the Patriots and you're two games up on them, it won't matter. I mean, and that's certainly possible because the Patriots have struggled and they could have a one-game lead going into that game. But that would be the only scenario because it doesn't – you know, the Chiefs, you've beaten them head-to-head. So you'd if you have a one-game lead on them, yeah, look, it's too far down the road. But anyway, it's unlikely they'll have something to play for. And Deshaun Watson was great yesterday, and he looks like – you know. He looks like he's a hell of a young quarterback. 17 touchdowns through 9 games. He's been awfully – or 19 touchdowns, whatever it is, 19 through 7 or – it's a crazy number, 19 through 7, I think. He's been fantastic.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll go 6-2. I just don't know which two is going to lose. You know, Patriots would be the obvious one to circle, and perhaps maybe either the Ravens or the Bengals, one would think. You know, definitely could see them going 5-3, I guess. This offense has to play.
Look, you should beat the Colts. Should beat the Colts on the road in a dome, 1 o'clock game. That really, honestly, that game. Although I think it was Marvin Lewis, man. The Bengals aren't going to fire anybody in season, but if they had lost yesterday at home, that would have been the time to do it. But I think if you beat the Titans and the Packers, and you're looking at 9-2, and you look at where the AFC is right now with only one team with 5 wins that's not in first place being the Bills. I mean, if the Steelers are 9-2, they're going to be pretty damn close to – I mean, everybody's going to put them in the – they're going to be a playoff team. So if they can get through the next 3 weeks, they'll be in big shape the next 3 games.
Absolutely. Head into the Bengals game and then Ravens. I mean, it's a tough stretch of those 4 games, Bengals, Ravens, Patriots, and Texans, as we said here today. But, all right, David, I think we worked this one over pretty good. We'll see what the All-22 says, talk a little bit more about it on Wednesday, talk about some other league stuff, I think you said, around the league on Wednesday.
Yeah, I thought we'd do our kind of midseason review. I don't know if you want to do that Wednesday or Friday. We'll do one of these next two. We'll do a midseason review. And the other, why don't you, if you want to start sending us topics or questions, if you can put in the email line, just put bi-week topic or question, whatever you want to put it in the email header, the subject line, so that we can sort them out. And we'll spend the podcast on I guess, Friday, kind of trying to at least half the podcast kind of get into those things.
Woo, we stretching these things long, brother. All right. As always, you can follow my irritable self on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do, and, boy, we really need to read off some of these names, David, on Wednesday. Why don't we take time to read some of these donations that we got recently as well, too. Quite a few have come in recently. We sure do appreciate it. For those of you that want to donate like those people have, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit the donate button, upper right navigational bar. That'll take you to PayPal as well. We certainly do appreciate all the support. Yeah, we still hear from people from all over the world as well, too. We appreciate that as well. David, I'm not on a bye this week. I don't know about you, but I'll talk to you on Wednesday.
All right. As always, enjoy the victory. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.